Would you read Leviticus 27:30 off the screen with me together right now, please? All the tithe is the Lord's. Say it again. All the tithe is the Lord's. Now, it actually says a little more than that, but let me give you the whole verse right here. It says, "And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, it is the Lord's. It is holy unto the Lord." All the tithe is the Lord's. And then in Malachi chapter 3, verse 8, would you notice what God says about tithing? Many passages in the Bible on the subject of tithing, but especially I always, and you always, if you know the Bible, when you think about tithing, you think of Malachi chapter 3. Look at verse 8. I'm going to expound this as we go. "Will a man rob God? Yet ye have robbed me. But you say, wherein have we robbed thee? In tithes and offering." And that's a really amazing thing, that God would say that just like somebody would walk into a store and rob a store, just like somebody would walk into a bank and rob a bank, just like somebody would break into somebody's home and rob the people in that home, God says it is possible to rob God. He says then in verse 9, "Ye are cursed with a curse, for ye have robbed me, even this whole nation. Bring ye all the tithes into the storehouse." Let me break that down for you. The word "all" there means the whole tithe, the totality, everything that belongs to God. The word "tithe" is the Hebrew word ma'aser. It simply means 10%. Into the storehouse, and the storehouse we'll talk about a little more later in the message, that there may be meat in mine house, that there may be food and supplies. "And prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts." Prove me now is a word of entreaty. It means, I pray now, check me out. That's really what it means. When it says, "Prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts," it means the Lord, Jehovah, of all the different hosts. He is the Lord of the host of angels, the host of the armies, the host of the sun, the moon, and the stars. He is the Lord of the host of all creation. He is the Lord who is in control of all the hosts and goes to battle for His people. It's interesting that He would use that phrase right there. Why didn't He just say, "Prove me now herewith, saith the God of heaven"? Why didn't He say, "Prove me now herewith, saith the Lord"? But He doesn't. He says, "The Lord of hosts." He uses that because the Lord of hosts is the one who is in charge of all the powers of all creation and goes to battle on behalf of His people when they honor Him. "If I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing..." One, that phrase, "windows of heaven," doesn't occur very often in the Bible. One of the places where it occurs is where the flood came and the windows of heaven were opened up and all of the earth was covered with a flood. And God says, when we give like He wants us to, then He floods our lives with blessings. That's what it means, literally. "I will pour you out, empty out of heaven, a blessing," the word means a gift, "that there shall not be room enough to receive it. And I will rebuke the devourer for your sakes, and he shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts. And all nations shall call you blessed, for ye shall be a delightsome land, saith the Lord of hosts." Again, the key verse is Leviticus 27:30, "All the tithe is the Lord's." And I want to speak to you this morning on the subject, understanding tithing. A great question to ask in any activity of the Christian life is this: why? Why do we have a church service? Why do we take the Lord's Supper? Why do we baptize? Why do we go soul winning? Why do we tell people that there's a heaven and hell? Why should we read and study God's Word, the Bible? And why should we give to the Lord? A preacher by the name of Harold Clayton has preached all across the United States for years. Wonderful man of God. Right after he got saved, he came to church the next Sunday or the one after that. It was soon after he was saved. There in the bulletin, was a notice that the preacher was going to speak on the subject. In fact, Brother Clayton turned to his wife and said, "I wonder what that is." He said, "Look, it says, why you should be a tither. Why you should be a tither. I wonder what a tither is. I wonder what tithing is. I wonder what that is." Of course, the Bible word is tithe. And the more I study and preach from this amazing book, the Bible, honestly, the more hesitant I am to preach just on the subject of tithing. Not because I don't believe in tithing, not because I don't believe the Bible teaches tithing, but because tithing is only one part of the entire scope of the Bible's teaching on stewardship. God is not just concerned with what you do with the 10%. God is concerned with what you do with everything that He gives you. Because it is the Lord who gives us everything that we have. I sincerely believe that the New Testament church, that New Testament church giving almost always exceeded the tithe. And in many cases, far exceeded the tithe. But still, the word tithe or tithes occurs 34 times in both the Old Testament and the New Testament, and is without a doubt a significant teaching from the heart and mind of God. So if you're going to understand tithing, there's several things that the Bible teaches about it. Let me see how many of them I can give you this morning. If you're taking notes, you might want to write them down. Number one is this. And it is foundational to all the rest. If you don't get this first point, you really won't understand anything else. The tithe is really given to Jesus Himself. The tithe is really given to Jesus Himself. Now, you might want to hold your place there in Malachi 3 because we'll be coming back. But I want you to turn to a bunch of passages with me as I preach this morning. The first one is Genesis chapter 14. And this is the first mention of the word tithe in the Bible. And of course, you know the law of first mention. Whenever you see the word, any word, used the first time, it is a key to understanding the meaning of that word or the meaning of that doctrine that comes from that word all the way through the Bible. And so, the first mention of the Bible, interestingly, is Abraham tithing. In Genesis chapter 14, Lot and all of his family and lots of others had been captured from the city of Sodom. And Abraham went and conquered those who took them away and brought them back. And in verse 17, the king of Sodom went out to meet him. And in verse 18, and Melchizedek, king of Salem, brought forth bread and wine, and he was the priest of the Most High God. And he blessed him and said, "Blessed be Abraham of the Most High God, possessor of heaven and earth." Notice verse 20, it's the key verse. "And blessed be the Most High God, which hath delivered thine enemies into thy hand." Now this is Melchizedek blessing Abraham. And then he gave him, this is Abraham, gave Melchizedek tithes of all. Who is this Melchizedek anyway? Hebrews chapter 7 verse 3 describes Melchizedek. Listen to it. "Without father, without mother, without descent, having neither beginning of days nor end of life, but made like unto the Son of God, abideth a priest continually." What a description. Find how many people in the Bible are described like that. I'll tell you who I believe Melchizedek was. I believe that he was a pre-incarnate appearance of the Lord Jesus Christ. But even if you don't, the fact of the point, the principle is still established because Hebrews 7:3 says he's made like unto the Son of God. What is my first point? The tithe is really given to Jesus. When Abraham gave Melchizedek, in the first mention of the tithe in the Bible, when he gave that to Melchizedek, he was giving it to Jesus. Every time I give my tithes and offerings, I try to look beyond the church, beyond the offering plate, and in my heart and my mind, I picture whatever my picture, whatever your picture is of Jesus. You ought to have that in your mind, and don't just let yourself fall into the trap of just saying, "Well, the offering plate goes by and I'm just dropping it in." Brother Rogers, you're back there. Bring an offering plate up here. Let me show you everybody what I'm talking about. Now, There are folks who say tithing was just Old Testament law, but this was before the law. And when Jacob got right with God in Genesis 28, he immediately made a vow to bring a tenth of everything to God, and that too was before the law. Tithing is a law of God written not just in the law, it's written in your heart and in your conscience. Abraham, before there was any command, knew he was supposed to tithe. Jacob knew he was supposed to tithe. I read about a man who, every time there was a request for any kind of offering from his church, he would say this years ago, "I've got a calf which I'm fattening. When it's ready for market, I'll give the proceeds to the church." Several times he'd use the same excuse. "I've got a cat that I or a calf I'm fattening. When it's ready, I'll give the proceeds to the church." He finally, after using the same excuse several times, he was approaching the church a little late one Sunday, and he heard the choir singing the song, "The half has never yet been told." In the distance, his conscience bothering him, what he heard was this: "The calf has never yet been sold." He got to thinking, "I better sell the calf." Why was he thinking that? Because his conscience was bothering him. Now picture this with me, would you, today? Let's say that Jesus, literally, physically, bodily, would happen to walk into this auditorium today. I doubt if that's going to happen, but he could if he wanted to. And he walked up to you. Not anybody else. He walked up to you. How many here are saved? Let's see your hands. You know you're on your way to heaven. Thank you. You can put your hands down. He stopped and he spoke to you and he said, "I just want to remind you what I went through for you." And he told you about coming to this earth and being born in a cow stall. And he told you about enduring the mocking and the scorn and the laughter of men. And he told you that he did that for you. And then he told you how he performed all these miracles. And then, after taking the Lord's Supper with his disciples, he walked into the Garden of Gethsemane. And there he sweat, as it were, great drops of blood in an agony of heart and soul. His disciples had gone to sleep. He comes into the arresting party, comes into the garden, and Judas kisses him on the cheek. And Jesus looks at him and says, "Judas, betrayest thou the Son of Man with a kiss?" And he looked at the crowd and said, "Whom seek ye?" And they said, "Jesus of Nazareth." And he said, "I am He." And it was the equivalent of him saying, "I am the great I am." The Bible says they fell over backward. They took him out. They went through a kangaroo court trial, found him guilty, had false witnesses accuse him. Then they stripped his back and they took a cat of nine tails and ripped his back open until it was a bleeding mass. They plucked his beard out. They put a crown of thorns on his head. Isaiah said he no longer even looked like a human being. They put him on the cross. They put nails in his hands and in his feet. And then they threw a spear in his side after he'd already given up the ghost. What if Jesus were standing here right now? What if it were Jesus standing right there and he held out his hands, go ahead and do it, and he said, "I want you to see my hands"? What if he pulled aside his shirt and said, "I want you to see the scar from the spear in my side"? What if he said, "I did all of that for you"? And then he said this, "Let me tell you why I did all that for you. Because I am the one who created earth, the universe, heaven and hell. And I didn't want you to go to hell. Hell was made for the devils and the angels. And I didn't want you to go there. And I did all of that. And not only that, but I'm in heaven. I've been in heaven preparing a place for you. You ought to see the mansion I've got ready for you. I know you don't have much down here, but it doesn't matter. You're only down here for a little while. You're going to be with me for all eternity. 10,000 times 10,000 times 10,000 times 10 million years. For all eternity, time will be no more. I've got the most wonderful place prepared for you." He says, "I've done all that for you." And then he looked at you and said, keep those hands where we can see those nail prints. And he says, would you like to do something for me? What would you say? Is there anyone who has ever done as much for you as Jesus? Talk to me. No. Is there anyone who's ever done as much for us as Jesus? And what does he say? I'd just like to know that you love me by your giving me 10% of what I gave you this week. You see, a lot of folks think that it has to do with money. It doesn't have to do with money. He owns the cattle on 1,000 hills and all the green beans and taters in those hills. He owns the gold. He owns the silver. He owns everything. He says in Psalm chapter 50 that He owns everything there is, and if He needed anything, He says He wouldn't tell you. God doesn't need anything. He doesn't need our money. He wants our obedience and our love. When the offering plate goes by you, you know what you need to think? You don't need to think, well, there's that old ugly usher again. All them ushers are ugly. I wish we could get rid of them ugly ushers. And there's that plate, and let me have that and get rid of it as quick as I can. And no, what a lot of people think is this, at a church just asking for money again. Check and see if you come here regularly how often I preach on tithing. Not very often. I used to preach on it more than I do now. I don't know. It's like the longer I'm a pastor and the longer I live, the harder it is for me to preach on this. I thought it'd get easier, and it doesn't. But you know what you ought to think? When the usher reaches out, you see his hand, you ought to picture a nail-scarred hand. You ought to picture that the tithe, when you see that picture on the screen in front of you of Abraham bowing before Melchizedek, what is it saying? The tithe is the Lord's. You're giving the tithe to Jesus. That's what you're doing. You're not. And I'm literally dropping my tithe in right now. And I always try to do this. That's the reason, before we take the tithes and offerings, I will often say, remember that you're giving unto the Lord. Give as unto the Lord. Because if you don't look past earthly things and realize that giving is a spiritual thing, your giving is not ever going to be what it ought to be. If all you think is, I can't afford it. If all you think is, the church doesn't need it. If all you think is, I don't like the way they use it. If all you think is, I need it worse than anybody else does. You won't understand the whole principle of tithing upon which it is all built is this. It's the Lord's. It's our way of showing Jesus we love Him on a weekly basis and that we hadn't forgotten Him from last week. The tithe is the Lord's. Thank you, brother. You can go down. The reason Christians hold so tightly to things of this earth is because they've lost their concept of who Jesus is and what He has done. Evangelist John Linton years ago told about a railroad fireman who was a member of one of his churches. Became concerned for the soul of an engineer with whom he worked, and one day while eating lunch at a railroad siding, he worked up the courage to ask his friend the all-important question, "Sir, what do you think about Jesus Christ?" The engineer of the railroad silently meditated for just a moment and then replied rather sharply, "I'm afraid I don't think very much of Him." He said, "Really? Why?" The fellow said, "It so happens my wife is a member of the same church you are, and we're well off financially. We have no children, our home is paid for, we have an automobile free of debt, and everything in life we want or need we have. Twice a month I sign over my check and give it to her. She knows she can do anything at all she desires with that money. She can buy clothes, put it in the bank, use it for entertainment, or spend it on anything else her heart desires. She knows it would make no difference to me what she put into her church. Yet I personally know that every Sunday when the offering plate is passed, she drops one dime into the collection." The engineer lifted up a little bag of biscuits and said, "You see this little bag of biscuits? It cost me a dime. I figure if Jesus Christ is not worthy any more than a 10-cent bag of biscuits, I can well afford to do without Him. You see, the world's opinion of Jesus is often your opinion of Jesus. And if my opinion of Jesus is not that He is worthy at least of my tithe, what does that say about my opinion of who Jesus is? Is He the God of this universe? Is He the one who has given His life for me? The tithe is the Lord's. It is given to Jesus. Here's what you'll find. People who are struggling with giving, number one, they put that out of their mind. Number two, their conscience is bothering them, so they start griping. Somebody asked a preacher about the givers in his church. He said, "Our givers don't gripe and our gripers don't give." The tithe is really given to Jesus. Secondly, you want to understand tithing? The tithe is, and this overlaps somewhat what I already said, but it needs to be said. The tithe is an earthly gift used to express gratitude to heaven. It is an earthly gift used to express gratitude to heaven. Now, you have that same picture there of Abraham giving to Melchizedek. What is that? An earthly gift used to express gratitude to heaven. You know what I've noticed? Everyone I can think of gives, and usually gives generously to their God. It's just a matter of whether their God is spelled with a big G or a little G. And that's true regardless of their difficulty or their poverty. I've been in the Philippines. I've been in Papua New Guinea. I've been in several countries where I'm thinking of Ghana, South America. I'm thinking of San Juan, Puerto Rico. I'm thinking of several countries I've been to where I saw temples, Buddhist temples or Hindu temples or other places like that, where people filled with poverty were bringing gifts to their gods. And these places would be filled with gold. You know why? Because those people gave to their God. In December of 1990, in Great Britain, the vanity license plates were being sold at auction. The name Elvis came up. Only one person in all of Great Britain could have it, and their way of doing it in Great Britain was to auction it off. And it started at 1,000 and went to 5,000, then 10,000, then 20,000, then 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, and it wound up a man paid $132,000 for a vanity license plate that said Elvis. Why? He was telling you who his God was. People give to their God. Some people pour massive amounts of money into antiques, motorcycles, new cars, antique cars, nice appliances, nice furniture. Nothing wrong with any of that. I'm not criticizing any of that unless and until it becomes your God and becomes more important to you than your God. I read this recently. Those of you who are around in the 60s might remember the Indian guru Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who taught the Beatles and the Rolling Stones how to do transcendental meditation. Now this is from 2000 or 2001 here. His latest project involves gathering 40,000 yogis in India to hop while simultaneously assuming the lotus position. I don't know what the lotus position is. Does anybody know what? Is that where they sit like this? Is that where they do this? I want to know how they hop while they sit like that. Anyway, 40,000 yogis being trained to hop. From this position. After trying that, I think they deserve whatever they can raise from it now. According to Newsday magazine, the yogis will, quote, create a force field that can repel hatred and spread happiness in the world's collective consciousness. The campaign, started well before September 11, had already raised more than $40 million by October of 2001. That's interesting, isn't it? All these yogis in that position hopping have raised $40 million. All told, the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi hopes to raise $1 billion from peace-loving billionaires in America to help cover housing costs and other expenses for his hopping meditators. You know why? Because people give to their God. That's why. You know what I've noticed? People with bad habits still feed them. The New Testament talks about those whose God is their belly. It's referring to their passions and desires and how determined they are to satisfy them. I noticed that people who can't afford to tithe, it's amazing, they can still afford television, VCRs, cable TV. They can still afford all kinds of creature comforts of all sorts. Somebody put it like this: a man's true priorities in life are often reflected in his checkbook entries. You could add to that, or his credit card charges. Whatever or whoever you love to give to, because they are number one in your life and you couldn't imagine doing without them, including yourself, you'll find some way to do it. It should not sound strange to you and me to hear of Christians who sell expensive cars and drive cheaper cars so they can afford to tithe. Who sell TVs, VCRs, and cut expenses in other areas so they can afford to tithe. I have a preacher friend, got saved years ago, sat down, and the next Sunday heard a sermon on tithing and went home and calculated and realized that on his budget he could no longer afford to have a car and also tithe. He sold his car. He started walking and riding a bicycle so he could afford to tithe. Why? Because the tithe is an earthly gift used to express gratitude to heaven. Third thought about tithing is this: the tithing is an absolute minimum in giving. Now turn back to Leviticus chapter 27, if you will, please. This is the passage that is really our text. And notice verse 30 and 31. Leviticus 27, verse 30 and 31. "And all the tithe of the land, whether of the seed of the land or of the fruit of the tree, is the Lord's. It is holy unto the Lord. And if a man will at all redeem aught of his tithes, he shall add thereto the fifth part thereof. And concerning the tithe of the herd or of the flock, even of whatsoever passeth under the rod, the tenth shall be holy unto the Lord." Isn't that interesting? You know what he's telling there? He's telling how the animals were chosen. Notice the picture. When it was time to tithe the animals, then the man who owned them would stand at the gate of the sheepfold, and the sheep would be brought into the sheepfold, and as they went by, he would stand there with a rod, and that rod would, on the end of it, have a piece of cloth with red dye on it. As they went by, he'd count. One, two, three, or he'd count. One. Then he'd count 10 more. He'd count 10 more. And the first of every 10 belonged to God. Now, here's what this guy's doing. He's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 21. And he gets to number 31 and he hits that one on the head. Oh my goodness, that's my best sheep. Oh, look at that one. That's the fattest one. That's the most perfect one. That's the one I was going to get more money out of than any of the rest. You know what God said? God said, if you're really determined to keep that sheep, you add 20% to its value. That's what he was saying there, to make sure that God is not cheated and gets at least the tithe without any question at all. Because we would have a tendency to say, well, I'll substitute this one over here. And God says, but that one's not as good as that one, and you know it's not. So add one-fifth of that one when you give. Yeah. Let's say you made $456 this week. The tithe is $45.60, but if I were you, I'd go ahead and give $46 or $47 or $50. I'd rather go over in my giving to God than to go under.
Yes.
Several years ago now, I discovered that I had skipped a week in tithing. I'd gone on a mission trip, and I don't believe it's ever wrong to pay your tithe in advance. Yet you could pay several weeks, you could pay a month, you could pay a year if you want to, you're paying in advance. I'd be very careful about paying it late, but I don't think it's wrong to pay it in advance. Well, I was about to go on this mission trip several weeks, so I paid my tithe before I left. I paid that week and another week or two, and then I got back and I got confused. And a month later, I discovered I was sitting back in my office and I was writing out my tithe checks, and I said, let me go back and check here. Whoa, I missed a week. Well, the finances were real tight right then. I just had lots of extra expenses from the trip and some other things, and I was looking at my bill saying, I know this. I'd rather owe somebody else than I would owe God. I'm paying my tithe. When I was a little boy, my daddy... I'm the youngest of six, and my brother and I were number five and number six. And by the time they got to us, they hadn't really done this with the other kids, I don't think. They started giving us an allowance. I got a whopping 25 cents a week. That's a lot of money back in the 50s, early 60s. 25 cents a week for a little boy? I said, praise God. My daddy looked at me and he said, son, I want to tell you something. He said, you either give 3 cents every week to the Lord or give 5 cents every 2 weeks. And if I ever hear you miss, your allowance stops. You know, tithing has never been a difficulty for me. Never. I'm not bragging. I'm not boasting. It was that I was raised in a home where it was as natural as taking a drink of water. It was as natural as breathing. My family were poor. I'm serious. We really were. I didn't realize how poor we were until I got a little older and found out that I was the only one that was going through some of those things. There are times I went to church in the best-looking T-shirt I could get. There were times when I was a little boy in school. In fact, my brothers and sisters, we were pretty much all this way. We all worked in the lunchroom at school because we couldn't afford the lunches 25 cents a day. I really didn't mind that. I didn't think much about it till later. I felt sorry for the others because when you worked back there and got to be friends with all the cooks, you got whatever you wanted to eat. I got more cookies than anybody got. So, it wasn't any big deal. But I remember as a boy in grammar school, they would have activities in the auditorium that cost you 5 or 10 cents to go to them. And I would sit in the classroom by myself because I was the only one that didn't have the 10 cents to go to those activities. I look, but I'm not, no need to feel sorry for me now or then. It didn't hurt me at all. In fact, it taught me, but I never grew bitter about it, never at all. My dad would, I remember my dad coming in. There were six of us kids, and my dad worked in a cloth finishing factory, Cherokee Finishing Company. I remember going in where my dad used to work. They had this cloth spread out, and they would put these all these designs that used to go on the cloth. My dad was the one who would work with that design to get it into the cloth. He did it for years and years and years. And my dad didn't make very much. I remember my dad coming home and showing me how much he made and saying, "Now, son, the Lord gets this. He always gets his part. 10% belongs to God." As Daddy grew older and we grew up, he started giving 15%, then 20%, then 25%, then 30%. When my dad went to heaven, he was giving 30% of his income to the Lord. Now, would you turn to 2 Chronicles chapter 31? Let me show you the fourth point and show you that the tithe, 2 Chronicles chapter 31, the tithe is the first 10%. The first 10% before anything else. 2 Chronicles 31 verse 5. "And as soon as the commandment came abroad, the children of Israel brought in abundance the first fruits of corn, wine, and oil, and honey, and of all the increase of the field, and the tithe of all things brought they in abundantly. Notice that the tithe is the first fruits. I'm often asked, Brother Davis, do I tithe before or after taxes are taken out? My answer is this: who is first, God or the government? I believe God ought to get His part before the government gets theirs. One fellow wrote this, a preacher wrote this: one day, perhaps soon, our God is going to fold up the earth and the heavens as a man folds a piece of clothing. Gold, silver, stocks, bank accounts, antiques, they won't be worth anything then. A gentleman recently told me he wanted to make $1 million so he could give a large gift to God's work. He wasn't too pleased when I told him God was more interested in what he was doing with the $25,000 a year he was presently making. From time to time, I've heard people remark they have left a portion of their estate to the Lord's work when they die. I'm certain that wills have their proper place, and Christians as good stewards should have one. But I wonder how much pleasure God takes in those who have done little in life but leave a large sum in death when it really cost them nothing then. Do you really believe that we're in a struggle for the souls of men, or are we just playing games? Is Jesus coming again, or is that a meaningless cliche? Are the words of the poet true? Only one life, 'twill soon be passed. Only what's done for Christ will last. Is that true, or is that just sterile sentimentality? The tithe is the first 10%. And then notice in Deuteronomy chapter 12, turn back there if you will please, that the tithe had to be brought to God's chosen place. You didn't just do anything with the tithe. It had to be brought to God's chosen place. In Deuteronomy chapter 12, verse 11, "Then there shall be a place which the Lord your God shall choose to cause His name to dwell there. Thither shall ye bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings and your sacrifices, your tithes, and the heave offering of your hand, and all your choice vows which ye vow unto the Lord. And you shall rejoice before the Lord your God." And look on down at verse 17. "Thou mayest not eat within thy gates the tithe of thy corn, or of thy wine, or of thy oil, or the firstlings of thy herds, or thy flocks, nor any of thy vows which thou vowest, nor thy freewill offerings, or heave offering of thy hand, but thou must eat them before the Lord thy God in the place which the Lord thy God shall choose." Is stating clearly that the tithe was not to be kept at home and used for other purposes. The problem is not that people can't afford to tithe, it's that they're spending God's tithe on themselves. I challenge you to do a little word study between Malachi chapter 3 verse 10, where it says, "Bring all the tithes into the storehouse," and 1 Corinthians chapter 16 verse 2, "Upon the first day of the week, let every one of you lay by him in store." Compare the Hebrew word for storehouse and the Greek word for store. In fact, I've got right here in my hand a computer printout that shows the detailed meaning of the Hebrew and Greek word, and what you find out is that it's the same meaning. Jesus loved and gave Himself for the church. The New Testament place where fellowship and worship took place was the local church. I'm for the Red Cross, but my tithe doesn't go to the Red Cross. I'm glad for the American Cancer Society, but my tithe doesn't go to the American Cancer Society. I'm glad for the Heart Fund and rescue missions and even individual missionaries like we have here all the time, but my tithe goes in the local church. Always been that way. I've only been a member of 4 churches in my whole life. That's it. I was baptized in Northside Baptist Church in Gaffney, South Carolina. I was there until I went to Texas. When I went to Texas, after I'd been there for just a few weeks, I started ministering. I'm not sure I've ever even told you about this. I started driving 65 miles one way to minister to a little church in Abbott, Texas. I was minister music there. I think it was 3 months that we were there. We drove back and forth on Sunday. We drove down on Sunday morning. We would spend the afternoon usually at the pastor's home and have a meal there, and then I'd lead the singing and work with the choir that evening. Then we would drive back after church Sunday night. So we were driving 130, 140 miles every Sunday. We joined that one church for about 3 months. They paid us $25 a week. I actually put more tithe in than they were even paying me while I was there. It didn't matter. You're not there to calculate that. You're there to serve God and put your tithe where your membership is. The church is like a storehouse where we all together put God's tithes and our offerings, then distribute it to the work of God in Lincoln, Logan County, the cities around here, the state, and around the world. I appreciate good camps and places like that. I'm thinking of Cedar River Camp over in Iowa. And Brother Dave Smith, my good friend, he tells me that he's gotten offerings for the camp and they'd be marked tithe, and he sends it back with a nice letter. I've had people personally send me their tithe made out to Pastor S.M. Davis, and they put on their tithe. What do you do? I send it back with a little note saying that it needs to go into church. I've never saved up my tithe. I always put my tithe in the church where I was a member. I've said, this is where it needs to be. If you're in a church without Bible standards, if you're in a church where they're supporting liberal causes and you can't put your tithe there, you need to get in a church where you can put your tithe there. Our church is not currently experiencing financial problems. In fact, you hang around here a while, you'll find out we don't talk about finances very much. But there have been times when our church had financial problems. I believe God lets that happen sometimes just so God can show church members they need to tithe and their tithe needs to go to their church. God isn't just interested in His church prospering. He's mainly interested in you and me being obedient and growing in Him. I believe He is interested in His church prospering. In fact, you know why? You know why our government is usually financially behind, both the federal and state government? Did you ever notice they're always struggling? Do you know why? I really believe you stand before God, here's what you're going to find out. Because they never have enough money to do what they need to do, because much of what they do was designed by God to be done by the church. And when people don't give their tithe, and the church can't do everything that it's supposed to do, then the government picks up the slack. And when the government picks up the slack, it costs more to do it than if the church was doing it. And so, let me tell you something. One reason our taxes are so extraordinarily high, and I do believe they're high, is because people don't tithe. And what happens is their income gets cursed, and God said, I will tell you something, everybody winds up tithing somehow or other. The sixth point is found in Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. Here's what it says. Thou shalt truly tithe all the increase. Notice that word increase. Of thy seed that the field bringeth forth year by year. The tithe is given on the increase. It's important for farmers and other businessmen who... I've had people were confused about this, but it's really very simple. If you run a business, you've got cost. You've got a building. You've got utilities. You've got overhead of all sorts. And at some point, there is going to be a profit. There is going to be an increase. And that is what you tithe on. Number seven, the Bible teaches that those who benefit from the tithe are also supposed to tithe. Look at Nehemiah chapter 10, verse 38. Nehemiah chapter 10, verse 38. And the priest, the son of Aaron, shall be with the Levites when the Levites take tithes. And the Levites shall bring up the tithe of the tithes unto the house of our God, to the chambers, into the treasure house. That means this. Preachers ought to tithe. Missionaries ought to tithe. We support the Hedis over in Romania. And the folks who help handle their finances are here today. You can talk to them. They'll tell you what the Hedis do. The Hedis tell them you leave the tithe in the church back there before you send us all our support over here. Make sure that our tithe is in our local church. We're members of Park Meadows Baptist Church. Make sure our tithe is there. I preached in a church, preacher, number of years ago now, I remember preaching in church, and the preacher was telling me how many financial problems they were having. I preached a message on stewardship. And I found out after I preached it, the pastor himself didn't tithe. And I said, how?
I said to him, I said, my dear brother, how can you expect your people to tithe if you don't tithe? I've talked to missionaries who I found out kept and spent their own tithe. I don't want to spoil them. I don't want to have anything to do with it. I heard a story about a man who approached a Baptist preacher and said, Pastor, I'd like you to preach the funeral. And the preacher said, I don't preach funerals for dogs. And he said, well, would you recommend another Baptist preacher who might preach the funeral for us? My wife and I have allocated $2,000 for the preacher who preaches our poor dog's funeral. The preacher looked back and said, why didn't you tell me your dog was a Baptist to start with? Now, I doubt if that story's true, but if it is, that preacher ought to tithe on that $2,000. Malachi chapter 3, verse 10, notice that tithing is one of God's ways of teaching you to trust Him. Prove me now herewith. Test me in this. You'll find out you can trust me. One of the biggest reasons Christians don't tithe is because they don't feel like they can really trust God. The word test there is not the same as tempt. You don't tempt God. Here's tempting God. All right, God, I'm going to give the tithe, but if you don't bless me, I'll never give anything to you again. That's trying to shove God in a corner. It won't work. It is also tempting God to obey in the area of your giving, but totally disobey and disregard what God says in the area of your spending, and then expect God to bail you out. Here's somebody who comes on Sunday. Well, I've never given before, but, well, I'm supposed to tithe. Preacher said I'm supposed to. Bible says I'm supposed to. My conscience is bothering. I'm going to give God His tithe. They give the tithe on Sunday. They go out and buy a new TV they can't afford on Monday. They say, well, I'm trying to prove God. You're not testing God's faithfulness. You're testing God's patience. A Chicago businessman by the name of Thomas Kane spent over 40 years lecturing in the United States, distributing millions of tracts on tithing. He advertised repeatedly for one consistent, conscientious tither who failed to experience God's blessing. He said in 40 years and thousands of miles of travel, he never found one. Never found one man consistent, conscientious, loved God, gave the tithe that God didn't bless. You say, how does it work? I don't know. Just know God's on the throne, it works. When Marconi invented the wireless telegraph, there was a great controversy among scientists as to whether the mysterious electrical currents passed through the air or through the earth. When Marconi was pressed for an opinion, he refused to reply. Instead, he pointed at his wireless telegraph and said this, "Gentlemen, all I know is this, the thing works. It works. I can't explain to you how tithing works. I just know, beloved, it works. It works. It works." I really love this next point. Turn to Deuteronomy chapter 26. Here's the point. God's people should ask God for His blessing when they have tithed. You should ask God and expect that God's going to bless you when you give God His tithe. Deuteronomy chapter 26, verse 12 to 15, here it is. "When thou hast made an end of tithing all the tithes of thine increase the third year," and so on, then, maybe we better read all of this. Verse 13, "Then thou shalt say before the Lord thy God, I have brought away the hallowed things out of mine house, and have also given them of the Levite to the stranger," and so on. Verse 14, "I have not eaten thereof in my mourning, neither have I taken away aught thereof for any unclean use, nor given aught thereof for the dead, but I have hearkened to the voice of the Lord my God, have done according to all that thou hast commanded me." Then, verse 15, what's it say? "Look down from thy holy habitation from heaven, and bless thy people Israel. And the land which thou hast given us, as thou swearest unto our fathers, a land that floweth with milk and honey." They were saying, bless us. What does he say in Malachi 3, verse 10? "Bring the tithes in the storehouse, there may be meat in mine house. Prove me now herewith, saith the Lord of hosts, if I will not open you the windows of heaven and pour you out a blessing, that there shall not be room enough to receive it." Many times over the years, I've heard testimonies of people who started tithing and how God blessed them. Of course, you also have the opposite. A curse was pronounced on those who didn't tithe. Let me ask you this. If you can't trust God enough to tithe, how can you trust God for the rest of your needs? Robert Sumner said this. A few years ago, I was talking with a businessman who was serving as chairman of a publicity campaign in one of my revivals. At that time, he had been saved just a couple of years. He delighted me in telling of some of his trials and blessings as a new Christian. He told how one time shortly after his conversion, his business was $120,000 in the red. He walked the floor of his home at night, unable to sleep, and days his nerves were ragged and jumpy. Then one day while driving down the highway, listening to a radio preacher, the thought struck him that he was a debtor to God, not just to the other people. He pulled his automobile over to the side of the highway, bowed his head, and promised the Lord he would begin tithing. He turned to Robert Sumner with a smile and said, "In 6 months' time, we were out of debt and above board." God blessed us. Explain that. You can't explain that. Lester Olof said, "We either learn the grace of giving or live in disgrace." God said about an unsaved man in Acts chapter 10, verse 4, "Thine alms, thy prayers and thine alms are come up for a memorial before God." And God sent a Jew to the Gentile man to point him to Jesus Christ. Acts 20, 35, "It's more blessed to give than to receive." Why? Watch me. If I receive, I receive, and if I share it with those around me, then they're blessed too. But when I give to the Lord, and it goes into His church, everybody in the church is blessed. Everybody in the community is blessed. Everybody that rides a bus is blessed. Everybody, every missionary that we support is blessed. When I give, when I receive, it's me getting blessed. It's more blessed to give than to receive. When I give, I'm able to bless thousands of people all over the world. I'm talking about the blessings God gives. Some of the greatest companies in America were started by men who were Christians and tithers. Do you recognize these names? William Colgate, founder of the Colgate Company. Mr. Hershey of the Hershey's Chocolate Company. Mr. Kraft of Kraft Cheese. Jarman, the shoe manufacturer. Kellogg's, the cereal producer. Crowell of Quaker Oats. Care of the Care Fruit Jar Company. Procter of Procter & Gamble. And John D. Rockefeller of Standard Oil. What they all have in common? Two things. Number one, they were Christians. Number two, they were tithers. John D. Rockefeller Sr. put it like this. "Yes, I tithe. My first wages amounted to $1.50 a week. And the first week I took $1.50 home to my mother. She held the money in her lap and explained that she'd be happy if I would give a tenth to the Lord. From that week to this day," he said, "I've tithed every dollar God has entrusted to me." He said, "If I had not tithed the first dollar I made, I would not have tithed the many millions of dollars that I have made." Do you know why there are folks here this morning who have trouble tithing? Because you haven't always done it. And it's like, where do I start? When do I start? How do I start? Just start. What can you say? Just start. Just start obeying God. Just start doing it. Sit down and look at your budget and say, we got to make it work somehow or other. The tithe is the Lord's. It's not ours. We don't want to rob God. It belongs to Him. There was I heard a testimony years ago, wonderful testimony, about a layman who heard his pastor challenge his people to double their tithe. There were some real needs in the church at that time. They needed a building, they needed to do some other things, and he said, and the pastor challenged his people to double their tithe. And this man in his church had not tithed, went home and said to his wife, "If some of those people can give a double tithe, we can at least start tithing." And they started the next Sunday. Or they started that day. They came back that night and started tithing. The very next week after he started tithing this Sunday, he found out that his company was going out of business in 30 days. What would you think right away? Boy, the Bible's not true. He would be thinking, I started out, I really meant, you know. He went home and talked to his wife and agreed that since they had made their commitment to God, they would stick with it. And a week after that, they got a call from his company's biggest competitor, and they said to him, "We understand that you're losing your job with your company. We want to offer you the same position in our company. We will give you a 30% increase in the salary that you were making over there." Is there a God on the throne? You say, explain that. You can't explain that. The tithe is, but if you tithe, God blesses you. Let me show you a tenth principle here about tithing. It's found in 2 Chronicles 31. Turn over there right quick, would you please? It's a very interesting thing. And the principle is this: when all of God's people tithe, there will be more than enough to do the work of God. 2 Chronicles chapter 31. 2 Chronicles chapter 31. And look at verse 10. Verse 10. 2 Chronicles chapter 31. Am I in the right place here? Verse 6 and 7. Here it is. Yes. Verse 6. 31 verse 6. "And concerned the children of Israel and Judah that dwelt in the cities of Judah, they also brought in the tithe of oxen and sheep and the tithe of holy things which are consecrated unto the Lord their God, and laid them by heaps." I love that. I love it. Heaps. Pounded up. It was so much. "In the third month they began to lay the foundation of the heaps and finished them in the seventh month." Verse 10. "And Azariah the chief priest of the house of Zadok answered him and said, since the people began to bring the offerings into the house of the Lord, we have had enough to eat and have left plenty, for the Lord hath blessed His people, and that which is left is this great store." They said, look at this. It's piled up here everywhere since God people started tithing. Look, we got everything we need and we got all this extra. Wonder what they did with all that extra. Well, you could do all kinds of things with it. One of the most expensive things in this world is a ministering church. It costs to buy Bibles. It costs to buy tracts. It costs to run buses. It costs to have a nursery. It costs to run a Sunday school. It costs to reach out to lost souls. The only thing more expensive than a ministering church is a dead church. Because a dead church costs the souls of men. A dead church does not lift the lost from despair. A dead church cannot rescue the perishing and care for the dying. A dead church cannot let the lighthouse shine on the shore so that lost men and women and boys and girls at sea can see the light and find out how to avoid being killed on the shores. Why do missionaries have to leave the field? Why do they come back saying they lost $700 a month support? Why do beer companies drive better vehicles than most churches? Why do many ministries suffer in otherwise good churches? Why? It's simply this: because people don't tithe. Yeah, I thought many times, I'm all for what we did with our stewardship ministries over the years, raising the money and God's people sacrificing this church literally hundreds of thousands of dollars so that we could build this building and now the other building out yonder debt free. But can I tell you something? I really believe if every member of this church tithe, there'd been no need at all for that. No need at all for it. I did a little calculating one day. My guess is this. Our offerings run $5,500 a week, something like that, our general fund offerings. My guess is this. If every member of Park Meadows Baptist Church tithe, the offerings would probably be $30,000 a week. Now, I say every member. You got to remember something. The FBI couldn't find some of those folks. I don't know where a lot of them are. But if every faithful member of this church tithe, my guess is the offerings would probably double like that. If every faithful member of this church gave God his tithe, you know what we'd have? We'd have heaps. We wouldn't be saying, well, we're going to move into that building and we're going to have just enough just to get in. We're going to have bare walls and bare floor and lights overhead and just enough. And we cut a whole wing off and sometime out yonder in the future, we'll be able to build that wing. But instead of that, we'd be moving into a nice finished building with a tremendous testimony for God. We've already got a testimony. God's already given us a wonderful testimony. But imagine the testimony if all of God's people tithe. The 11th principle I point out to you is this: everyone tithes. Let me ask a simple question here. How many here tithe? Thank you. Put your hands down. I didn't even look. Now let me tell you, everybody should have lifted your hand, because everybody does. You tithe one way or the other. Look at Malachi chapter 3 verse 9. You're cursed with a curse, for you've robbed me, even this whole nation. You see, let me ask you something. If the police could, every time there was a robber, would they catch him? If they could, would they? Probably. What happens when you rob God? You always get caught. Nobody gets away with it. Nobody does. Look at verse 11. He says, when you don't tithe, the devourer comes in and wipes it out. I will rebuke the devourer for your sake. She shall not destroy the fruits of your ground, neither shall your vine cast her fruit before the time in the field, saith the Lord of hosts. What I hear from most people is this: I can't afford to tithe. You know, it's a vicious circle you've caught yourself in. The reason you can't afford to tithe is because you don't tithe. And the devourer is not rebuked, and the curse stays upon your income. You're cursed with a curse. What's it saying? It's suggesting to us that God often gets His stolen share back through sickness, financial reversals, business losses, and tragedies. Evangelist Sam Marsh, years lived first of last century, told of spending the night in a home of such humble and modest circumstances, he had to sleep on a pallet in a corner so the man's wife could rest on the only bed in the house. After they had devotions together, the host explained to Morris. He said, maybe I should explain to you our poverty. In January 1919, he and his first wife had made a covenant with God to tithe. They were very careful to give a tenth of all their money, chickens, butter, milk, anything. God abundantly blessed them financially in return, and they also pledged to missions beside their tithe. By the time the harvest was half over, he had given several times more to the church than ever before, had paid his missions pledge in full, and had about $100 in his tithe account at the bank. He reaped a bumper crop that year, and prices were unusually high. He'd been planning to buy a new place, and as he rode to town one day, sitting on a bale of cotton, he reviewed the past months and considered how much he had given to God's work and how much he would give by the end of the harvest if he continued tithing. He finally concluded if he were going to be able to buy the new place, he would have to quit tithing. So riding along that day, he reversed his vow to God. He said, God, I'm undoing my vow to you to tithe. In addition, he withdrew the money in the bank and used it to help finance the deal. God's money. Talking that night, years later, with Evangelist Sam Morris, he broke down with tears and told how within 4 months he had lost everything he owned and buried his wife. And this is this man's testimony, not mine. I'm not saying God always does this. This is what this man told Evangelist Sam Morris. He said, my friends tried to console me and wondered why such tragedy had to overtake me, but I was never in the dark for a moment. I've always known that God was chastening me for my wicked disobedience to Him. He said, I was cursed with a curse. You have to understand tithing. It's really given to Jesus. It's an earthly gift used to express gratitude to heaven. It's a minimum in giving, not a maximum. Many people, many Christians give 20, 30, 40% of their income to God. There are even some wealthy men who give 90% to God and live off of 10%. The tithe is the first 10%. The tithe had to be brought to God's chosen place. It is given on the increase. Those who benefit from the tithe are also to tithe. Tithing is one of God's ways of teaching you to trust Him. God's people should expect God's blessing and can look forward to God's blessing when they obey Him from a pure heart. When all of God's people tithe, there'll be more than enough to do God's work. There'll be heaps of things. Everyone tithes one way or the other. They either give it or God takes it. Can I point out to you right there? That everybody here, right now, you're either living on something like 15% or you're living on something like... Let me show you what I'm talking about. If you give God the tithe, if the Bible is true, because you if you do it with the right heart because of love and obedience to God, God honors your obedience and your love and gives back to you with extra on top of it. Give shall be given unto you good measure. Now what happens if you rob from God? Then God collects that with interest. You're either, because you're tithing, you either, in God's sight, you say, I can't preach, I don't understand it. When you stand before God one of these days, you'll understand it. You could have had more and you wind up with less. The last thought is this: tithing is not a substitute for obedience in other areas. Would you look at Matthew chapter 23? There are folks who say the New Testament doesn't teach tithing, but Jesus Himself commanded and commended tithing in Matthew 23, 23. It's just sort of a strange circumstance where He did it. "Woe unto you, scribes and Pharisees, hypocrites, for ye pay tithe of mint and anise and cumin." He said, "You are scrupulous in making sure you pay the details of your tithe, and have omitted the weightier matters of the law, judgment, mercy, and faith. These ought you to have done, and not to leave the other undone." What's He saying there? He's saying there are things more important than tithing. Justice, mercy, and faith are more important than tithing. It's not saying tithing is unimportant. Incidentally, that's repeated in Luke chapter 11, verse 42. Tithing is not a substitute for obedience in other areas. Somebody says, "Well, I tithe. I don't do anything else, but I tithe." That won't work. Tithing is not an excuse to be a moody, up and down, good attitude today, bad attitude tomorrow Christian. Tithing is not an excuse to not witness to lost friends. Giving dollars is not a substitute for you personally giving out the gospel to others. Tithing is not a substitute for getting saved. How many times have I had people say to me, "Well, I give to my church. I think that's good enough." You could give everything you've got to the church, to the poor, whatever you want to, and still die and go to hell. Listen to Proverbs 21:27. "The sacrifice of the wicked is abomination. How much more when he brings it with a wicked mind?" It is especially abominable to God when lost people feel that by giving money to the church, they're enhancing their chances of getting to heaven. It is not true. You cannot buy... What? How much would you have to give to buy one mansion in heaven? How much would you have to give to rent one mansion for one day in heaven? I got to tell you, you don't have enough money and never will have. Heaven is a gift. Salvation is a gift of God, not of works, lest any man should boast. Hey, you can't put a penny in any bank till you first open an account. You go down to the bank, walk up to the counter and say, "Here's $100. What's the first thing they're going to say? "Open an account." What if you walk out and just leave it? You know what they're going to say? Wait a minute. You can't just leave that laying here. You've got to open an account. I want to tell you something. The first thing you do when you come to Jesus is not give your tithe. You don't leave your money laying there. You leave your heart laying there. With the heart, man believeth unto... You've got to open an account. You've got to open an account in heaven's bank and say, "Dear Lord Jesus, cleanse me from my sin. Save me. Take me off the road to hell. Put me on the road to heaven." Then we can talk about giving. If you're here this morning, you're lost, you say, "I don't like all that preaching on tithing." Forget it all. Forget it. Open an account. Open an account. Come to Jesus and say, "Dear Lord Jesus, I'm lost. I need to be saved." That's where it all starts. Christian, are you giving God His tithe? Are you obedient in this very important area of the Christian life? Do you know the joy that comes from it? I got to wind up with this. My dad with sacrifice used to tithe. My dad was the happiest man when somebody preached on tithing you've ever heard in your life. If my daddy's in heaven now, but if my daddy were here today, depending on where he was sitting, a whole bunch of people here would have been scared out of their wits by now. When we were in the old building over yonder, my daddy was here. It was about 17 years ago he came, and one Sunday I was preaching on tithing. My daddy was an old-fashioned shouting Baptist. Right in the middle of my sermon, my daddy stood up and shouted, and I watched the whole crowd. It went up. The whole crowd just lifted up. Scared a lot of people to death. But my dad had joy because he knew the joy of giving.